Sven Hedin was the last of the great explorers, an individualist who spent the greater part of 4 decades crisscrossing Central Asia. He found lost cities in the desert, solved the mystery of the wandering lake Lop Nor, was one of the first Europeans to travel in Tibet. His maps and scientific writings expanded knowledge about Asia, while his popular books thrilled millions and were translated into many languages. He was the last Swede to be elevated to the nobility, but his political support for Germany in the Second World War tarnished his reputation. In this program, we'll be looking at Hedin's early life and the travels that prepared him for his first great expedition to Central Asia. Sven Anders Hedin was born in Stockholm on February 19, 1865, the second child of a respected family with an artistic and scholarly tradition.
He grew up into a rather big family in Stockholm, and his father was the principal architect in Stockholm, responsible for development in let's say, mid-19th century Stockholm.
Håkan Wahlqvist is an expert on Hedin's work and head of the Asian section of Stockholm's Ethnographic Museum, which has had close ties with Sven Hedin.
His family originates from central Sweden, and they worked themselves up. And in the late 18th century, they became quite an important family here. The main doctor for one of the kings in the late 18th century was a forefather of Sven Hedin. His mother came from also from a bourgeois family, one would say. Owner of a big brewery in the background, pretty wealthy, but also a Jewish extraction. Her maternal grandfather's grandfather, something like that, was a Jewish rabbi immigrating to Sweden.
Now, his immediate family, they were very close, and in fact, because they were so close, they functioned as sort of an office for him back home, which made his expeditions possible.
Yes, very much they did. In his own family, immediate family, I think only one sister married. All the other ones also stacked together. And quite soon, when he started to become an important person, they joined up into some kind of secretariat to run the show, I would say. His sisters, they opened the mail, they registered it, they saw to that all the letters were properly filed after being answered. His father, up till his very late age, was the one who wrote out and made nice all the manuscripts which Sven Hedin brought back, and was very active in the very quick publishing that came about for all his books. His brother was also kind of registrar for all his photographs and all his drawings and everything like that. So they were a kind of secretariat. And he was the one to earn the money for them. He was the one to write the books. He was the one to go on long tours, delivering speeches in Europe. He toured Germany, he toured Britain, he toured France, and everybody was paid for delivering these speeches, lectures.
At the age of 15, Sven Hedin was inspired by the return of the Swedish geologist and explorer Adolf Nordenskiöld in his ship the Vega, the first expedition to sail from Europe through the fabled Northeast Passage, north of Siberia into the Pacific. The sensational journey inspired the young Hedin, who wanted to follow in Nordenskiöld's footsteps as an Arctic explorer. But in his last year in high school, something happened that changed his entire life. The school principal asked him whether after graduation he would be willing to travel to the Russian city of Baku on the Caspian Sea and spend 8 months tutoring a young Swedish boy. In August 1885, Hedin set out, the first time he'd traveled more than 100 kilometers from Stockholm. Gifted at languages, he used his time in Baku to learn Russian, Persian, and Turkish. When the time was up, Hedin set off on the first of his great journeys, traveling 3 months by horse through Persia. He wrote about it on his return to Stockholm.
It was a ridiculous journey that began in Baku on the 6th of April, 1886. I had a traveling companion, the young Tatar Baki Kanov, 600 kroner in my pocket, 2 changes of clothing, a warm jacket and a blanket. In a little leather bag over my shoulder, I carried a revolver, a sketchbook, a writing pad, and a couple of maps of Persia. Bakikanov had a large cape, a silver-ornamented rifle, and a dagger. Our equipment was rather light for a journey of 3,000 kilometers across Persia and back, but I thought it'll work out. One night in the highlands, we rested in a small village named Karsan. When we got up in the morning, it was snowing heavily and had been snowing all night. The road and the entire countryside were hidden under deep drifts. We got dressed as well as we could, got on our horses, and rode on. The snow fell silently in large floating flakes. Down in the valley it melted on our clothes, but farther up in the open windy heights it froze to ice, and very quickly our clothes were covered with thick sheets of ice that made all movement difficult. Finally, we were more or less frozen in the saddle. I was so cold I lost feeling in my arms and legs, fell off my horse and continued on foot, holding on to the horse by the tail so I wouldn't get lost in the blinding snowstorm. A few miserable huts appeared in the snow. Outside one of them we tied the horses, shook off the snow and entered a dark hovel with a dirt floor. We lit a large fire and sat around it in a ring, together with some other wanderers who arrived at the same time. The ceiling was low and it was crowded, damp and full of vermin, but it was nice to get warm and dry my clothes. When you are 21 years old, you aren't very particular.
Hedin's book, Across Persia, Mesopotamia, and the Caucasus, Travel Memories, was well received. In the fall of 1886, he enrolled at the University of Stockholm to study geology and continued with studies in geography at the University of Berlin. Because of his linguistic abilities, he was asked to serve as interpreter for a Swedish diplomatic mission to the Shah of Persia. In September 1890, his duties done, Hedin once again set off on his own, traveling through northern Persia and western Turkestan all the way to Kashgar, China's easternmost town and once a major stop on the Silk Road. This is how he described the town, which became so important in his later scientific expeditions.
On the 14th of December, we rode past the first villages around the Kashgar oasis and up to the Russian consulate, which was located outside the city wall. A tall, elderly man with a beard and gold-rimmed eyeglasses, a green cap and a long cloak came out and welcomed us. His name was Nikolai Fyodorovich Petrovsky, and he was the Imperial Russian General Consul for Eastern Turkestan. We lived in his house for 10 days and found a friend for later expeditions when Kashgar became our headquarters. Kashgar otherwise is no delight. A grey, poor, and dirty little desert town, located farther from the oceans of the world than any other city on earth.
The young girl from Kashgar, music from Turkestan. How serious were these first two journeys of Sven Hedin? Håkan Wahlqvist.
He was very much aware of what he wanted to get out of it. He wanted to create contacts, he wanted to know exactly where to get different kinds of merchandise that he needed for a big expedition. And it was really preparation for his first large expedition. He also trained himself to become a good observer and a very ardent recorder of what he saw. He started to make drawings during these early years, which in a way substituted for the camera, which he didn't have in those days. And he also started to write a diary. After his trip to Baku, he decided that he wanted to get trained in earnest on geology and geography. So he went to Germany, to Berlin, to get training there. And he met his teacher, von Richthofen, who was an expert in Central Asia. And Sven Hedin was more or less put to solve some of the problems of that area, and he was prepared for that. And this trip after the diplomatic mission to Persia was really to pave the way for that.
In the next episode of Sven Hedin, the last great explorer, we'll be looking at his first scientific expeditions in Central Asia. The readings of Hedin's work were by Arne Beverman. We also heard Håkan Wahlqvist of Stockholm's Ethnographical Museum. This is George Wood, thanking you for listening.